Better work presentations are possible. They're called Canva presentations. You can supercharge your work decks with AI-powered Canva presentations. Just start with a prompt, and Canva presentations will generate captivating slides in seconds. Or start with a stunning template and add images, graphics, charts, and data visualizations from their massive media library. You save time and wow your audience. There's a reason why Canva is used by 90% of the Fortune 500 companies. So nail your next work presentation with Canva presentations by heading to canva.com. Designed for work. This episode is brought to you by PNC Bank. Some things should be boring, like banking. Boring is safe and reliable. You don't want your bank to be surprising. Surprising is for podcasts about seemingly insignificant inventions that impact our lives, not banks. PNC Bank strives to be boring with your money so you can be happily fulfilled with your life. PNC Bank, brilliantly boring since 1865. Brilliantly boring since 1865 is a service mark of the PNC Financial Services Group, Inc., PNC Bank, National Association, member FDIC.
This is 99% Invisible. I'm Roman Mars. After the revolution in Cuba, the young Fidel Castro hired an official photographer by the name of Alberto Korda to chronicle his new life as a national leader. Korda followed Castro and Che Guevara, taking pictures of them as they met world leaders, went fishing, faced off in chess.
He even took that iconic image of Che, the one that's on millions of t-shirts.
That's Comrade Truffleman.
But my favorite images that Korda captured are of Che and Fidel playing golf. It was January 3rd, 1961, 2 years after the revolution, when Che suggested they go play around.
You know, Fidel said, well, you know, I don't play golf. And Che did play golf. He was actually pretty good. And he'd been a caddy back in Chile.
Helping us tell this story is John Loomis.
I'm John Loomis. I'm an architect and an architectural historian.
So Che and Fidel drove out to what was the ritziest, most elite country club in Havana.
All the members of the club, they practically have all left the country, but still here's this amazing place. The people who work here are still keeping everything clean and neat and taking care of it.
And Che and Fidel romp around the bucolic green acres in full military khaki and combat boots.
Che's still wearing that beret. And Castro is choking up on a golf club as if he's never seen someone use a golf club before.
They're just putting around and grinning while Alberto Korda snapped publicity shots of them.
And, you know, you look at the photographs and they're like schoolboys just having fun. And this was a lark and everybody thought this was, you know, a real hoot.
And the photos are actually beautiful because Korda is an incredible photographer. But also because the landscape is breathtaking. There's a river running through all these gently undulating, perfectly manicured hills bordered by this thick, lush forest of tropical plants. It's kind of magical.
Che and Fidel were captivated by this place, and they looked around and wondered,
what should we do with this? You know, this is a wonderful resource.
It wasn't going to stay a golf course, that was for sure.
And some say it was Fidel's idea, others say it was Che's, but one of them turned to the other and explained his vision for the property.
There, they would build an art school.
An international school for the arts that would draw students from all over the third world and bring them to Cuba and give them a, you know, first-class art education and all the art disciplines, free of charge.
And a beautiful vision for a beautiful landscape required a beautiful building. Che and Fidel decided they wanted to build the most gorgeous art schools in the world, something fitting with the newness and excitement of the fresh revolution.
Castro was recommended the young Cuban architect Ricardo Porro.
And he knew that, you know, Ricardo had very much supported the revolution, had risked his own life.
By housing rebels, Porro had never picked up a gun or anything. And in addition to his commitment to the revolution, he was also really talented.
So he seemed like the obvious person to choose.
Porro was told that if he wanted to design the schools, he would have to do it almost immediately.
You have to end the project in 2 months to begin the construction. I said, but it's impossible.
This is footage of Ricardo Porro in 2004. Porro passed away in 2014.
Porro was told, that's it, 2 months for the designs.
You take it or you leave it.
And I remember I asked him, I said, well, so Ricardo, what do you say? And he says, well, John, you're an architect, you know. You say, I take it.
I take it.
Now, the art school wasn't just one school. It was imagined as an entire campus with five separate schools for five distinct disciplines: ballet, modern dance, visual arts, music, and theater.
Ricardo Porro was going to need some help. He recruited two architect friends, two Italians, Vittorio Garatti and Roberto Gottardi.
Oh, and in addition to the time crunch, there was the embargo.
Already with the embargo, importing concrete and rebar was very expensive.
They had to use what they had. The three architects decided to build with locally made brick and terracotta tiles.
And with these tiles, they decided to make schools comprised of Catalan vaults. A Catalan vault is essentially a dome made of layered tiles.
And it's called a Catalan vault because it's predominantly used in Catalonia, especially Barcelona.
It was adopted particularly by Gaudí to do these very organic forms.
And so, with the unifying element of brick and unified style of Catalan vault, the three architects began to erect their separate designs around the edges of the golf course.
Okay, I'm going to throw journalistic impartiality to the wind here. These buildings are so beautiful. Each uses the vault in a completely different way, and they all roll over the landscape of the golf course and mix with the plants and the palm trees, and they wind and they bend and they unfurl into these plazas and courtyards, and their curving rooftops with all those vaults make them look alive, like they're dancing. And each school has a clear story to tell, with very intentional symbolism.
But Porro's school of visual art was the most literal. He imagined the school of visual arts, or as they called it, the school of plastic arts, as a building that would nurture art and artists and help give rise to a uniquely post-revolution Cuban aesthetic. This school was going to give birth.
So I tried to make the school of plastic art as the image of a goddess of fertility. So I put a lot of breasts in the domes.
No, really. The vaulted domes have these nipples on them.
And there was a special fountain in the main piazza.
And in the piazza, I placed a sculpture I did, just like a fruit called papaya, that in Cuba has a sexual feminine connotation.
Some higher-ups found this pretty scandalous. Porro was told to turn the water in the fountain off.
Yes, you have the breasts, and here you have the papaya, which is a metaphor for what everybody knows in the Caribbean. But I think that it's wrong to overemphasize that.
Because really, John Loomis says that the school is a commentary on Cuba's past and future.
As you're walking down those curved passageways, you can't see where you've been, and you can't see where you're going. In a way, that was a metaphor for this new chapter in Cuba. You know, this was a new adventure, this new revolution.
The revolutionary spirit was the driving force of the design and the construction.
The Catalan vault required a lot of labor, so there was this massive crew of young Cuban workers on the golf course making these structures.
All the workers felt a real buy-in because they felt that they were building the school that their children could potentially go to, whereas previously they had no hope that their children would go to university or to an art school.
And this endeavor was so exciting that the schools basically opened while they were still being built.
At some point when construction began, they said, well, let's just use the space.
The country club was already there with its meeting rooms and ballrooms, and of course they had those manicured grounds and the beautiful weather.
Ballerinas pirouetted on the putting green. Painters set up their canvases in the shade. Violinists practiced in the forest.
And students brought water and drinks and food for the construction workers and played drums to keep their spirits up. It was this beautiful, joyous undertaking. Except when it wasn't.
During that time, and still today, it's difficult to talk about the negative aspects of the revolution. So people really focused on the joyous part and the optimism, you know, because that's what do you hold on to when you're in this land of paradox.
Alyssa Namias co-produced a documentary about the Cuban art schools.
In Cuba, at the same time, for example, as artists were having drum parties to finish the buildings while the masons were working, and it was very beautiful and fun and joyous. There were other students who were sent to labor camps because they were homosexual.
Or religious, or in other ways, anti-revolutionary. And even before those agricultural labor camps opened in 1965, the anti-revolutionary students were expelled from the art schools. Ricardo Porro continued to give them classes in his home.
Porro could feel that the values of the revolution were shifting, as he says in the documentary.
I used to tell the other architects, don't lose your time making small details. Try to do things fast, because perhaps one day it's going to be stopped.
After the missile crisis, after the Bay of Pigs, military defense was given a much higher priority than, say, creating the most beautiful art schools in the world.
So there was the money issue, but also, generally, Cuba was starting to imitate the Soviet Union in more and more ways.
I made a very individual architecture, and they wanted Soviet architecture.
The Soviet architecture was blocky, functional, uniform, one size fits all. Completely the opposite of the sensuous, organic vaults and curves of the art schools.
There was an idea that the designs for the Cuban National Art Schools were extravagant for a socialist revolution that had to tighten its belt.
And one of the earliest proponents of that argument was Roberto Segre.
Roberto Segre was the architecture critic. Like, really, he was the only one. He had tremendous influence.
Segre was not a fan of the breasts and the papaya fountain, as Segre himself says in the film.
No, I am not against the sex. I like the sex with women, not with architecture.
These days, Segre admits that he was a bit harsh.
Now, Segre will say that he really didn't want to write those things, but he was under constraints by people higher up, mostly Antonio Quintana.
Antonio Quintana was the last of a generation of established Cuban architects. All his contemporaries had fled during the revolution, and this left Quintana at the top of his field by default. And he wanted it to stay that way.
Quintana clearly had a personal desire not to see Ricardo Porro continue to thrive as an architect in Cuba.
The architect Quintana and the critic Roberto Segre helped turn favor against the schools.
Workers were slowly reduced, the amount of workers. Porro's buildings were far enough finished so they were really able to be brought to the finish line or very, very, very close.
But the schools designed by the other two architects were not so lucky. The theater school was only 30% complete. The music school was also unfinished but had a few usable rooms. The most unfinished was the ballet school, which didn't have floorboards or glass in the windows.
All the materials were there, and it could have been finished in like 15 days. And the lead of the Cuban ballet, Alicia Alonso, who's a very famous Cuban ballerina, she visited the site.
And she says, I don't like it. No more ballet here.
And that was that.
The Cuban ballet opted for a much more centrally located studio.
And in July of 1965, the schools were just declared finished in all their varying states of completion.
They had an opening, declared them open, and they were used in the state that they were.
Even the unfinished ballet school was used, very briefly, as a Russian circus school.
The architects were scattered to different jobs within the Ministry of Construction. Ricardo Porro started working directly under Antonio Quintana, that last of the old guard architects, Porro's nemesis.
Quintana gave him very demeaning jobs. He gave him the job to design a cage for an eagle in the zoo.
Oh, my God.
I couldn't work anymore in my architecture, or I had to do awful things as they were doing, and I decided to leave Cuba.
In 1966, Porro left Cuba and moved to Paris.
And as for the schools themselves, the crazy thing is that they never closed. Even during some horrible spells in Cuba's history, when entire families were squatting in the rundown parts of the schools and ransacking them for materials, classes have always continued.
Well, except for the ballet school, where the classes never quite started. But the other four art schools continue to be among the finest in the world, although they are not as big as they were meant to be. And they're pretty run down in some parts.
Floods. Like, the first time I went there, there was a guy playing drums, but I think there was like a foot of water in the building.
Today, the schools are known as ISA, ISA.
ISA, what it's called now, the Instituto Superiore de Arte.
So no one's gonna come yell at us?
Especially under the rain, nobody's gonna come.
The schools with students have guards, of course, but Felipe Del Zaitis showed Avery the abandoned ballet school.
I have come many times and haven't seen any security guard, which is a problem because now there is graffiti and things happening there that shouldn't be happening. sometimes you want the security to be there.
Felipe is a multimedia artist who once studied at the theater school. Back then, the unfinished ballet school was a mysterious ruin.
Because when I studied here in the 80s, the whole thing here was a jungle.
Students would go there and party and stuff.
To hang out, if you have a girlfriend or a date, it was a great place to go.
He didn't know the story of the buildings. No one really did.
The story of this school was somehow like a taboo. It was never spoken, never discussed. There was like a secrecy about.
But then John Loomis, who we've been talking to throughout this episode, published his book about the schools called Revolution of Forms.
Revolution of Forms came out in March of 1999.
And through Revolution of Forms, Felipe finally learned the story of this place where he had studied for 5 years.
This is really shameful, and that they are not taking care of these things. But this was something that was done with a lot of love and with a lot of care. And it's something that not only belongs to Cuba, you know, that belongs to human culture, you know, to our culture.
And Felipe wasn't the only person inspired by Loomis's book.
Pero tengo esperanza que ustedes me defiendan y defiendan la idea de que esta escuela superior con que se soñó hace 40 años se construye.
That is Fidel Castro in 1999 saying, "This school will get done. This national art school that we imagined will get built."
Okay, we can't say that John Loomis single-handedly convinced Fidel Castro to take action on the art schools. But the year Revolution of Forms came out, Fidel Castro publicly committed to restoring them.
All three architects reunited in Havana and met with high-level government officials to plan the restoration. But this project was abandoned in the wake of the financial crisis in 2000.
For now, the schools remain in various states of completion. But even in their current disrepair, the architecture speaks for itself.
This view is
something else.
It's something else. Look, look at my skin.
Goosebumps.
Yeah, this is just for to look at something.
The schools of ISA don't look like any other buildings in the world. They are Cuban. They are the product, victim, and symbol of a revolution. To really understand the majesty of these schools, including some fascinating parts of the story that just don't translate to radio, watch the beautiful documentary Unfinished Spaces by Alyssa Namias and Ben Murray. It's rentable on iTunes, but you can find out all about it at unfinishedspaces.com. You've also been listening to the film's soundtrack throughout this episode, which was composed by Giancarlo Vulcano. Special thanks, of course, to John Loomis, author of Revolution of Forms.
I was accused in Cuba of being an employee of the CIA and writing this book to embarrass Cuba, and I don't think it embarrasses Cuba. I hope not.
Along with Jacob Reams, Jill Homburg, Albert Lopez, Dorothea Truffleman, and Charles Koppelman.
I am the producer and librettist of Cubanacan, the new Cuban opera.
The opera about the Cuban art schools just premiered at the art schools.
As far as we know, the last full Cuban opera written in Cuba and performed in Cuba was over 50 years ago.
It sounds like this. "99% Invisible" was produced this week by Avery Truffleman with Katie Mingle, Sam Greenspan, and me, Roman Mars. We are a project of 91.7 KALW San Francisco and produced out of the offices of ArcSign, the East Bay's premier architecture and interiors firm in beautiful downtown Oakland, California.
Whether you're a family vacation traveler, a business tripper, or a long weekend adventurer, Choice Hotels has a stay for any you. Choice Hotels has over 7,400 locations and 22 brands, including Comfort Hotels, Radisson Hotels, and Cambria Hotels. Get the best value for your money when you book with Choice Hotels. Cambria Hotels features locally inspired hotel bars with specialty cocktails and downtown locations in the center of it all. That's what I like. I like to be within walking distance of all the stuff. Radisson Hotels have flexible workspaces to get the most of your business travel and on-site restaurants. And at Comfort Hotels, you'll enjoy free hot breakfast with fresh waffles, great pools for the entire family, and spacious rooms. With so many hotel brands, Choice Hotels allows you to prioritize what you need. Choice Hotels has a stay for any you. Book direct at choicehotels.com, where travels come true. This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. We all carry around different stressors. Big stressors, small stressors, medium stressors, all kinds of stressors. When we keep them bottled up, it can start to affect us negatively. Therapy is a safe space to get things off your chest and to figure out how to work through whatever is weighing you down. If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. Get it off your chest with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/invisible today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/invisible. This podcast is brought to you by Squarespace. Finding work-life balance can be tough, but Squarespace gives you the tools to reach your goals and have time to celebrate. Squarespace is the all-in-one website platform for entrepreneurs to stand out and succeed online. Use Squarespace to create a website, engage with your audience, and sell anything from products to time, all in one place. With the new guided design system Squarespace Blueprint, you can select from curated layout and styling options to create a personalized website optimized for every device. Get your website discovered fast with integrated optimized SEO tools. Plus, make checkout easy for customers with easy-to-use payment tools. Accept credit cards, PayPal, Apple Pay, and in certain countries, give customers the chance to buy now and pay later with Afterpay and Clearpay. I built my own website on Squarespace, RomanMars.com, and the best part about it is I added some dynamic features, and I do not have to tend to it all the time. It just works. Head to Squarespace.com for a free trial, and when you're ready to launch, go to Squarespace.com/invisible to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain. So my wife and I wanted to take a couple of the kids to see Taylor Swift in concert. We signed in with pre-sale fan codes and logged in on separate devices, each going after a different venue. And then we got bounced out of different venues. And then she managed to get tickets in Minneapolis. So when you want the best, you have to act quickly or someone else will get it instead. It's like if you're hiring for your business. You want to find the most talented people for your open roles before the competition scoops them up. So what's the best way to do that? ZipRecruiter. ZipRecruiter finds qualified candidates fast. And right now, you can try it for free at ZipRecruiter.com/99. ZipRecruiter's powerful matching technology takes center stage to identify top talent for your roles. Immediately after you post your job, ZipRecruiter's smart technology starts showing you qualified people for it. Amp up your hiring performance with ZipRecruiter and find the best fast. See why 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. Just go to this exclusive web address right now to try ZipRecruiter for free. ZipRecruiter.com/99. Again, that's ZipRecruiter.com/99. ZipRecruiter. The smartest way to hire.
You can keep up with all the comings and goings of 99% Invisible on Twitter, Facebook, Tumblr, Instagram, and Spotify. And you can always catch up with us at our place at 99pi.org.
Radiotopia.